But he called upstairs to me and he said, "You know that urban legend about rats swimming up in toilets? Well, apparently it's not an urban legend. It's really true."
Oh, I hope you finished your breakfast. I'm Pauline Dakin. This is Maritime Magazine, and we are talking rats on the show this morning. Why, you may ask? Well, there are approximately 75 rats per block in urban areas of the Eastern Seaboard. In the three maritime provinces, that puts the rat census at around 50 to 60,000, enough to fill every seat in the region's biggest hockey arena six times over. But it's not just the numbers that make rats worth noticing. It's how frequently they pinball into our human world and how much they behave, as it happens, just like us. Reporter Leslie Lowe brings listeners snout to snout with rats this morning and tells us what she's learned about our animal doubles in a documentary called Year of the Rat.
I'm at Elaine Hart's place.
Hi, Leslie.
Hey.
Come on in.
Thanks. Any rats here?
No rats at the moment. Only one rat ever.
Elaine lives in cozy, family-friendly West End Halifax.
We made sure of that.
And yes, yep, there was a rat in her toilet.
I was in bed. It was late, like midnight, 1 a.m. or something, and Lyle was up watching television, and he could hear this sort of thumping. Cat was very agitated. She was running around trying to find the noise. And he looked all through the house, everywhere he could find, couldn't see anything that would cause that noise, and then it stopped. So he figured, well, whatever it was, maybe it was the wind. Problem solved. Cat settled down. Everybody goes to sleep. And then the next morning, he was painting our fourth bedroom on this floor. He came in to use this bathroom. And when he opened this lid here, there it was, rat corpse in the toilet.
Rat corpse. It swam up and it died. Though I have to tell you, the endurance of water-treading rats has been clocked at 80 hours. Now, thankfully, mercifully, it has not been a recurring problem. But, I mean, really, isn't once enough?
creeped out. I mean, we'd have heard of other people who this had happened to. I knew a woman I work with and another friend who'd had this, but I never wanted to use this toilet again. And I knew if my kids found out, they already don't like this bathroom because it's in the basement, but I knew if they found out, they might never pee anywhere again. I thought, we'll have to move.
Instead, Elaine called Adam Beaver.
Hi, I'm Leslie Lowe. I'm here to see Adam Beaver.
Yeah, thanks.
What's the cat's name?
Bremmy.
Bremmy.
Rat in the toilet? No big whoop for Adam Beaver.
My name's Adam Beaver. I work for the service manager at Bremner's Plumbing and Heating Limited.
And you have a cat in your office.
We do. We have a cat. It's not for rodents, but it's a stray cat we took in. Yeah, but, and I mean, we do run into rodents and rats and mice often in commercial buildings and buildings we go to do service work. A lot of times people will call us up for sewer smells thinking that they have a plumbing-related issue when come to find out. We had one last week, actually, where one of my plumbers went to a commercial facility and they were complaining of a smell and come to find out in the ceiling there was a very large rat in the ceiling that was half decomposed, and that's where the smell was coming from. And you almost end up got to be half plumber, half exterminator, I guess, but yeah.
Okay, that's commercial. But what about us regular people in our houses? How would we know if we had them?
If it's underground, which a lot of times they are, depending on the layout of the house and stuff, you don't know until they actually physically try to get out, or you see maybe you know, an indication being, you know, droppings or what have you in your, you know, around maybe floor drains or in your bathroom. But I've also heard of customers. There was a customer we had a couple of years ago who had who could hear the rat or what have you in the drain line, but it was above grade in the ceiling of their basement. They could hear it physically coming up and then crawling along and scratching and probably likely trying to find a way out or what have you. But usually you don't know until you see it. Well, I've had many customers, actually, that have opened the toilet lid to a very frightening scene, which is a rat in the toilet. There's been live and dead ones found. And actually, there was a case where the homeowner had a live adult rat, and I believe it was a baby rat or two in the toilet, and the plumber went over. All three were dead, but... That's what my experience was. People actually physically lifting the toilet lid too, and you know, having quite the scare, yeah.
Adam is the guy with the solution, or at least a solution of sorts. For a Lanehart, Adam installed a backwater valve. It's a one-way flap that goes in your sewer line. Things can flow down, but nothing can flow back up. Or, as is the case here, climb back up. But Adam points out, backwater valves were never made to foil rats. They were designed to prevent sewage backups. So while the valve is the plumbing go-to when there's a visitor in your toilet, Adam tells his customers it isn't necessarily a surefire fix.
If there's a will, there's a way. Obviously, if they're determined they want in, I mean, a piece of quarter-inch thick plastic ABS, you know, backwater valve, check valve flapper is not going to keep a rat out.
And that's the problem. A handful of people get them in their toilets. But really, it's just plain hard to keep a rat out of anywhere.
Okay, we're going into the collection storage area of the Museum of Natural History. It's an area
I'm with Andrew Hebda. He's the curator of biology at the Nova Scotia Museum of Natural History.
About 750,000 catalog specimens, of which 500,000 are zoological ones, so which means animals.
Which means... rats. Andrew has a whole cabinet full of them.
And I'm just going to open the first one up here. You remember these from last time you visited? Now, these are all what we call study skins. So the specimens have been captured, or they were brought in. They were measured, weighed, and then they were stuffed.
You can learn a lot from a dead rat.
You can see, the head is fairly intact here. So the head from the skeleton is approximately 3.5-4 centimeters long and approximately about just a shade over 2 centimeters wide. The rest of the skeleton, although the animal looks quite large, is compressible. So essentially, if it can get its head in through an opening, the rest of the body can be pushed through or pulled through, so it can compress through it. So notice that...
That's why rats fit through tiny holes. And if they can't fit through, they chew through.
And you can see the elements that make a rat a rat. Number one is you've got the incisors on the front, so these are teeth that keep growing. With us, it's the where we have 4 on the top and 4 on the bottom here. They have 2. They continually grow, so as they wear the tips off and wear them off at the end, they'll keep getting replaced. That's why they can get through such things as hard woods, concretes, and those kinds of things, because they just wear them down. And
I'm not sure if this will comfort anyone, but here in the Maritimes, we have Norway rats. Not black rats that can carry the fleas that carry the plague, which is nice, except Norway's are much larger. They weigh in at about 0.5 pound.
Like about 0.5 baguette, I guess, would be a good descriptive phrase. Maybe not what you want to hear. Total length would be from tip of nose to tip of tail, which is how we measure them, about 45 centimeters. So in the old system, say about 18 inches or so. And it's well fed. So this one is, you can see, it's the total height on it is about 8 or 9 centimeters at the back end, and cutting down to about maybe 4 or 5 or 6 in there. And you can see, turn it over, and you can see it's a female. So rats are mammals, and they feed their young, which of course is the characteristic of mammals. And if you look at the amount of gear, speaking as a farmer, 2, 4. 6, 8, 10. So this one's got 10 teats on it, so, and they're all quite active, so which means that this animal was feeding probably 10 baby rats at one time.
So let's do that math. One mother rat, 10 babies. Rats reach sexual maturity at 4 months, and get this, they can ovulate, mate, and conceive within hours of giving birth. So we got a 10-rat litter, which is conservative to average. Babies are pregnant at 4 months, 21-day gestation, carry the one. In 5 months, that's 100 rats. In 10 months, 1,000. So why aren't we completely overrun?
If you look at rat populations, they'll go up and down depending on local conditions, but in general, the populations stay relatively level, so which means there's quite a bit of mortality. So even though you may have, say, 4 or 5 or 6 generations a year with potentially up to 8, 10, 12 youngsters, by the end of the year, the chances are that most of those have died and only 2 will survive. And most of the rats that we have here, there's very few that live more than a year or so. So their lifespan is quite short.
And here's something else about the number of rats we have scurrying around. There actually aren't more rats around in the spring or in the fall, even though it's accepted wisdom that we're teeming with rats at those times of the year. It's just that we start going outside when it's nice, and so do they. In the fall, it gets cold. We spend more time inside. The rats are no dummies. They head inside, too.
My guess would be you'd be looking at perhaps... Among the three maritime provinces, take a rough estimate, say about 50, 60,000 rats anyways in that area. And that's about normal, and it's probably there's no indication that it's increased or decreased in the last decade or so.
So there you go. But the thing is, Halifax especially is seen as some kind of rat epicenter, a rat Shangri-La. A big blame is the city's municipal composting program. In Halifax, all our food and yard waste goes into green bins for pickup. And those bins are seen by some as al fresco fine dining for the city's rats. But Gord Helm?
Gord Helm manages solid waste resources for Halifax Regional Municipality.
He says green bins are not the culprit. Between January 2010 and this week, there have only been 3 official complaints about rodents in green bins.
I mean, when we designed this program, we were specific in the specifications for the green bin. It is designed to not be accessible by rodents or animals for that matter. That's due to the size, and there are no holes for people for rodents to get into. There are holes in the green bin to generate air movement and to dry things out, and that is intended to actually reduce odors and to reduce the attraction for rodents. And so the whole program was designed around that, and it has been our experience that there aren't rodent issues.
Next getting the blame? Urban chickens. I mean, they're not legal in Halifax, but there are pockets of them. And I've heard them blamed for vermin because chicken feed just gets scattered around in their pens. But look, there's a rat's paradise of food on the ground in every city. Tossed fast food containers, spillage from restaurant composting, heck, even people feeding ducks from park benches. Chickens hardly seem culpable. But top blame for Halifax's rat problem? It would be the same in St. John or Charlottetown. The port. And there are definitely rats on the waterfront.
Onward to rats.
Indeed.
So where are we going? I'll get you to tell me.
We're heading up to our Days of Sail gallery. We look at sort of the golden age of sail in Nova Scotia, when all the ships were made of wood, and that was a perfect home for lots and lots of rats.
Do you tell people that?
Well, those who show any interest at all.
The Maritime Museum of the Atlantic sits smack dab on the downtown Halifax waterfront. And Dan Conlin is the museum's curator of marine history.
Rats are funny. I mean, some people find them fascinating. Other people find them viscerally repulsive.
I have found that in my research.
So you can hear the nice creaky floors of our Days of Sail gallery. And this structure here is the actual deck house off of a coastal schooner built up near Parsborough, which we reconstructed the deck house in here. And we did detailed oral history with all surviving sailors who had actually worked on this schooner. And one thing they mentioned was, late in the career of this vessel, it was overrun with vermin. Of the six-leg, the eight-leg, and the four-leg variety. So when we reconstructed the deckhouse of the Rayo, you'll hear we have a delightful sort of marine sound effect in the back. We included the vermin. So if you look very carefully, there's cockroaches, mice, and one big-looking little rat on the ground staring right up at you.
Oh, with red eyes.
Yes, yes.
Wow, that looks like kind of a small rat to me. What do you think?
Well, yes, perhaps the Rayo's rations are not so lavish that he's grown to large size. Although the thing about rats is when you see one, there's usually more than one. So
it's true. And not just because they're plentiful, but because they live in societies. Did you know rats live in family groups, just like us, with leaders and followers and a strict communal order? Where you see one, there's a little family of 5, 10, 20 that you don't see. And did you know no rats are native to Nova Scotia? It's true. And I bet you can guess how the very first ones got here.
The big aggressive European rats arrived in Halifax, you know, as soon as the Europeans showed up, you know, the first French vessel that tied up and started trading fish and furs with the Mi'kmaq, probably a bunch of opportunistic rats, leapt ashore, and they've been with us ever since. And, you know, when the British settled in 1749, they brought thousands and thousands of rats. So they've really kind of been with, you know, the city since the Europeans arrived. And if you think of the architecture of a waterfront city, you have all these wooden piling wharves that go to the harbor that just create this sort of ideal little environment for rats to live and forage and form colonies. And then there's all those food sources that we provide them in a port city, and opportunities for them to come and go on ships that go all over the world. So rats have been one of the classic, desirable, one of the classic features of a sort of a port life.
Atlantic Canada sounds like kind of a rat paradise.
Well, in some ways, but of course then the rats are met with a whole barrage of counter-rat measures, you know, starting from classic things like, you know, ships for millennium have had cats aboard.
Medieval shipping laws required that ships have cats aboard. Many had ratting dogs. Dan told me a common job for idle young sailors was to head to the hold to kill rats.
And you could never get rid of them all, but you could.
The museum's steamship, CSS Acadia, has its own rodent control officer, a cat named Eric. But the battle against harbor squirrels, which is what Dan and his museum colleagues call the rats they see day to day, doesn't only happen outside the museum.
We have quite elaborate pest control measures, and our staff are always on the lookout for them. And often we know we have a rat in the building because all the mice disappear. Because they're being eaten by the rat or fleeing them. But then usually our traps are poisoned, get the rat before they do any damage. You know, rats are kind of, they have such a cultural power, they're kind of entertaining in some ways, but they are a real menace, you know. You know, a museum, we're always worried about them, you know, chewing up, you know, a precious painting or, you know, wrecking an artifact. Then there's the threat they pose to people. For mariners, rats were a multifaceted menace. They could devour the sailors' food, also sort of chew and damage rigging. You know, ropes would break when you went to haul on them, spread disease aboard the ship and in the ports they were visiting. And most important for sailors, they could wreck your cargo. So you could arrive in port and half the grain would be eaten and full of rat poop and you couldn't sell it to anybody and your whole voyage would be a waste of time and a loss for everyone. So sailors really hated rats.
Yeah, you're climbing up her back.
Now she's climbing up my back and she'll come out my hood. What are you doing?
Or she'll just
stay there.
She'll just stay mid-back.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, she finds some amazing places and you're sure you're going to drop her and she hangs on and just stays there. You certainly need an inner layer if they're going to go in between your shirts because they do have long nails. There she is. She's going
down. The Meeson family has a rat.
Now, come
and it ain't a dead one in their toilet.
Are you coming through? Where are you?
It's cute because when they're in your sweater, their heads will poke out the opening. And it's so cute because you can just see the small little head.
Thank you.
My name is Jasmine.
And who's this?
She's Blue, my rat. Well, she's a blue-hooded rat. That means her head and her neck is a bluish-gray, and she has a mark on her back that is a bluish-gray, too, and then the rest is white.
And her ears are pink.
Mm-hmm.
And her tail and her feet.
And her nose.
Jasmine is 10.
She'll go on my neck, and she'll go down my shirt.
She's had Blue since Christmas morning. She's never been bitten, in case you're wondering. In fact, most rat bites are accidental. I found this out by reading the book Rat, How the World's Most Notorious Rodent Clawed Its Way to the Top. It's by Canadian journalist Jerry Langton, who says because rats are nocturnal, they can crawl into bed with humans if they smell food on them. He writes,
most times the rats will be content to lick food residue off a person's face or hands, but a lapse in the rat's judgment can sometimes lead to a bite. Sadly, the most frequent victims of rat bites are babies and small children, because they are heavy sleepers and are more likely to have leftover food, often milk, a rat favorite, on their faces or fingers.
Yeah, that's pretty gross. Let's go back to Jasmine and her mom, Taya.
Yeah, she's part of our family. She watches TV with us when we all sit down as a family for television. I mean, it's pathetic. And we have blankets and she hangs out under the blanket or, you know, we're all saying, can I have my turn holding Blue? You know, and I'll be cooking and have Blue on the inside of my shirt. And, you know, so it's a little, she's part of our house, yeah.
But look, the family knows not everyone fancies rats.
Well, if you show them the front end, I think you'll have more. It's a good start. If you look, for example, at Blue, she's got this lovely gray-blue face with gorgeous eyes. And if you look at her, she's just, you know, a sweet rodent. I think what offends most people is when you turn around and you see the extension of her tail.
Lots of people I know get grossed out by the tail. They don't mind the rat, but it's just the tail so long. And it's kind of scaly. But if you go the right way, there's fur. But if you go the wrong way, it feels like scales, really.
Jasmine also points out a common cultural bias against rats.
Because in movies, the rats are always the bad people, and they're always from the sewer, and they're always animated to look ugly.
Why do we hate rats so very much?
We have two reasons. The most fundamental one is that they're very similar to us, okay? They like the things that we do, that we like. They like the same kinds of foods. They really like it when we put in structures. And as a species, we have this tendency that we really don't like to share. And if you think about animals, the ones that we're prepared to share with will be what we call pets. And so in some cases, people do indeed share with rats, but rarely will you see those ones running around freely. We like to contain them, so it's a general issue.
Yeah, and think about those uncontained rats. Think about that rat who made its way into your house. Think about where it was before it was in your house. The sewer, the toilet. That's just not pleasant. Plus, rats are notorious for carrying disease, and even though we have Norway rats, not the ones that carry the Black Plague, they can't seem to shake their reputation.
The Black Death did indeed have an impact on people's perceptions of rats, and of course, automatically, rats are rats, and people tend to, freak out a bit. It was funny because when I was in South America, then they weren't seen the same way. Now, admittedly, I wasn't in the cities; I was way out in the rainforest and cloud forests, and they were seen more as food.
So, some South Americans eat rats. In traditional Chinese culture, the rat is seen as a symbol of good luck. And as for how they got here, to the Maritimes, they grabbed an opportunity with those European settlers. Rats came here because humans brought them here. Now they thrive in our cities because they live off what we cast away, food and structures. In places where humans fail to thrive, the same goes for rats. Where humans succeed, rats are right there with them.
You think about them, they're not out there to get even with us, to do something to us. They're just trying to make a living.
You know, in that light, You can't blame that poor little fella that came knocking on the lid of Elaine Hart's basement toilet.
I do feel confident that we've licked the rat problem, at least inside the house. Or in the toilets. I mean, I guess there's nothing to prevent a rat from getting in another way. I don't know how small they can make themselves. Like a mouse can get really, really tiny. Anyway, I just don't want to think about it, really. It's bad enough in the toilet. At least it's in the toilet. You know, in the house would be another situation. Yes, but I feel confident we've got the toilet situation solved.
For Maritime Magazine, I'm Leslie Lowe in Halifax.
Thanks, Leslie. And something else that Leslie noticed while doing this story is that everyone seems to have a rat story. So this is your chance to share yours. Call us at 1-800-565-5463. That's 1-800-565-5463 and tell us your rat story or send it to us in an email to marmag@cbc.ca. I'm Pauline Dakin for Christina Harnett and me. Thanks for staying with us this morning. Have a lovely and hopefully a vermin-free week.